Welcome to the inaugural episode of Tell Me Again, where we bring you monthly stories and conversations celebrating the last 100 years of music and worship at the Dawson Family of Faith in Birmingham, Alabama. I'm John Woods, music and worship pastor, and your host. Inside the sanctuary, hovering between the choir loft and the congregation, is the platform, as we call it around Dawson. Moms and dads, still tired from midnight feedings and surprise diaper changes, stand there as they dedicate their family to God. The piano finds its place there too, ringing out in harmony with the other instruments as we worship together each week. The Word of God is boldly preached with kindness and clarity to feed our very souls. The platform witnesses life's most sacred moments, the joy of I do's spoken with trembling smiles, and the grief of farewells as tearful loved ones gather to say, "Into your hands, O Lord." Today, we have three stories that center around the platform at Dawson, the things it has seen, the ways it has changed, and the profound moments it has held in the life of our family of faith. Some of these stories may be a little too heavy for kids to hear, so please use your discretion. Let's get started. Jim, before we figure out what your story is today, would you tell us a little bit about who you are?
I came to Dawson first after growing up in a Methodist church. Sandy and I started dating in 1962, and we could not date on a school night. And Sunday's a school night, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if we came to church, we could be together. And Sandy was in chapel choir, so I started coming to Dawson.
Sandy was in chapel choir?
Yes.
Wow.
And so I came to Dawson to be with her. I was a bad influence because eventually she started sitting with me instead of being in the choir.
So if we're coming to worship on Sunday morning and we're sitting in the congregation, we're going to find you in one of two places. So what are those two places that we would find you on Sunday morning?
Well, I'll be in the choir loft most Sunday mornings. And about once a month, I might be on the platform in the front line helping to lead worship.
So you're the guy with the acoustic guitar doing finger style on
yes.
Sunday mornings. If we don't know who Jim Reeves is, that's one of the ways that we can know who you are.
Yes, one way is that is one way. The other way is the guy with the gray hair.
So over the years that you've been at Dawson, Jim, you have had a role, because of your background in construction professionally, you've had a role in a lot of the construction and improvement projects around Dawson. So I wonder if you could tell me again today a little bit about what it has been like as the sanctuary itself, that main worship space that we gather in every Sunday, that we worship in, that we have funerals in and weddings in, that we sing, that we hear the Word of God preach, that particular space. How has that changed over the years? Tell us a little bit about that.
That's been a big growth item for us as worship has grown, as our membership has grown, the needs in the sanctuary changed. Now, when Dr. Arendall came in 1948, pretty soon started construction on actually building the sanctuary that we're in right now. And it was finished in like 1951 or 52. And it was just one long room with a platform and choir loft in the front and a baptistry, and then one balcony in the back. It was one long room.
Hmm.
Then in the 50s, due to growth, the West Wing Education Building had been built, and they added two transepts, one transept each side, top and bottom, which added about 100 seats per level. So that added about 400 seats. That was in the 50s. In the late 60s, we added the second transept, double the size of the transepts, which added a bunch more seats. So that gave us the footprint that we have now. The two-layer transepts on each side, and the balcony in back. In 1988, when Altus Newell was our pastor, we expanded the platform and the choir loft. and built the wings that we have now that connect the choir loft to the two upper transepts. Also made the platform a lot bigger, and we put in removable rails that looked permanent.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a lot of flexibility in the platform. We could basically take a good portion of the choir loft out and have a big platform.
And for those insiders in the music and worship ministry, that's the high rails, low rails thing?
Okay. Yes.
And you had a big part of building those, did you not?
Well, they chose me and my company to actually do that.
Got it.
And the biggest challenge we had there, I had to put my neatest and most diplomatic superintendent on that job, because we were on TV at the time, and every Friday we had to stop 2 to 4 hours early and put up plywood panels so that whole platform looked good on TV.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big challenge right there.
So that was you said that was 1988. Did I get
yes,
that year right?
Yes, 88. Mm-hmm.
So the sanctuary, if I'm in the congregation and I'm looking at the sanctuary, the way that the platform is right now, that has been there like that since around 1988. Is that right?
Pretty much like that. We had another pastor that was here for a little while, Gary Fenton.
Mm-hmm.
And he did not like to preach from behind the pulpit. So even when he came for his trial sermon, we built a little platform out in front of the existing pulpit for him to stand on.
Mm-hmm.
When he was called as pastor, we redid part of the platform to have the pulpit removable,
mm-hmm.
and a little extra room out in front there, so a more permanent part of the platform was built at that point.
And that's when we installed the thrust, I guess, as we call it internally.
Yes.
Here, put
yes.
the thrust in. So
yes.
So since 1988, we've had a similar look. And then when Dr. Fenton joined Dawson, we added the thrust there. So if you're going all the way back, Jim, in... when we built this, what year did we build the sanctuary? Remind me,
around 1950.
So when we're looking at 1950, we're walking in the sanctuary, and there's no vestibule at this point, right? That was something that was added.
It was very small. It was expanded a great deal when we did that.
When Dr. Fenton was here, he
yes.
added the vestibule.
Yes.
So if you're looking at the sanctuary in 1950, you're walking up, we still have the big columns,
mm-hmm.
but you're walking straight in, and there are no transepts on the side. You're simply looking straight ahead at the front of the sanctuary. You've got a choir loft with, if I'm not mistaken, there are pews in the choir loft at that time. There weren't individual chairs, so people could squish in and squish out, and then you have the platform there where Dr. Arendall preached. And then you fast forward to now, and we've got 4 different transepts. We've got the big choir loft. We've got the stage. A lot has changed, hasn't it?
Yes. Now, there was a small vestibule out front.
Mm-hmm.
It was more than doubled in size when we did that work on the front, basically moving the building out to put that larger vestibule. But the sanctuary itself is pretty much unchanged, except for the transepts.
What has it been like for you just personally, not as a construction guy, not as somebody who's been a part professionally in this, but just as a worshiper, what has it been like for you to see the way that the physical space of Dawson, the sanctuary itself, how has that felt to you as it's changed over the years? I'm curious.
Well, I enjoyed seeing the additional seating that came from, I was here when we did the expansion of the two transepts, when we doubled the transepts. And I think that made a big difference in the feel of the room, and made a big difference in how many people we could have in worship. Of course, the big change in capacity or room for worshipers came with multiple services. Another thing that is very interesting to me is in how it has been used. We had contemporary worship at first over in the gym in the rec center. Hmm. And then when the north building was built, it moved to the chapel. But then with COVID, we moved that service into the sanctuary. So it had some, had a broad range of worship styles and feel in worship. Post COVID, I think it's just amazing how, you and others in the music ministry have made all of our services the same, have blended the old with the new in such a wonderful way. Not many churches can do that, I don't think. But an amazing thing to me, and it shouldn't be amazing, but over the years and the little differences in the sanctuary, I guess the biggest difference I saw was expanding the platform and the choir loft. But even with that, even with the changes, it's still the same feel that it's always been. It's still the Dawson feel in that room. From what I see and what we're working on right now, we're still going to have that same feel with this new project that we're doing to renovate and update the sanctuary.
Jim, you are not just a part of the congregation, but you are a worship leader at Dawson. You sing in the choir. You sing as a part of the front line. You play your guitar. But you're sort of in a unique seat. So when we started, you said, "I'm the old guy with gray hair," or something like that.
You know, I was 70 years old the first time I ever played my guitar in big church. I had never done that before. I'd been in the choir some. And leaving worship one Sunday, Dan Mullis stopped, turned around and caught me in the hall and said, "Oh, Jim, would you be willing to play your guitar in a duet to introduce a song?" And I stopped deer in the headlights, and Dan said, "Just pray about it and let me know." And he took about two steps, and I said, "Wait, no, I'll do it." And just about a week before, somebody had posted a video of me playing the guitar and singing, and she posted right under it in a comment, "I didn't know you could do that. Why haven't you been sharing it?" So a week later, Dan asked me to do that. And anybody asking me to do that before probably I would have said no. I wouldn't have done it. But that was the first time I got to do that.
But you are a person that is leading music of all different kinds. What does it mean for you as a worshiper and a worship leader to serve and to lead a congregation that is singing "To God Be the Glory," you know, one moment, our sort of classic commitment day hymn, right, from the Arendal era, all the way up to Phil Wickham's Hymn of Heaven, you know, with a rhythm section and everything in between. What does that mean for you as a worshiper that's been invested in Dawson all these years? I'm curious.
Well, even though you kind of left out "Come Ye Sinners," a bluegrassy thing in between, you're exactly right. All the different styles, genres, it is all conversation with God. With all of those styles, some people are going to really identify with different forms of music. And I think we hit them all. And it comes together in that room. All of us being different, having different feelings about certain types of music, but they all work.
Yeah. It's a gift to be able to serve. I know you know this too, because you stand in front of the congregation, but it's a gift to serve a congregation that sees that part of what we do as we worship is we prefer one another, right? We sing each other's songs and we make them our own. So your favorite song, your bluegrass stuff that you would prefer to sing all of the time, right? that music may or may not be my favorite, but I sing it because I care about you and I love you. And you sing the song that may not be your favorite because you love me more than you love the song. And that is a part of what we do at Dawson. That's a part of what the sanctuary has held for us, hasn't it, since it was built, is a group of people who have different perspectives, but are all united around Christ. And that's what this space has done for us over the years. And thank you for reminding us and telling me again all the ways that God has used the space that we worship in the sanctuary to further his kingdom. We're really thankful for your story today. Thanks, Jim. Everyone knows Linda Little. She was the accompanist at Dawson on the piano and at times on the organ for 40 years. Linda and I had the privilege of serving together for a piece of that time, for much of her time, though, serving with Dr. Bob Hatfield. Linda, we are really glad to have you here today. Linda, tell me again your story about welcoming an outside group to Dawson.
Back in the 1980s, there had been a part of a Jesus movement where young people came together who had not been in church, and it was a revival of sorts. It started on the West Coast, and they came together and started going to church and were very well accepted. And it was an exciting time because when they came to church, they also brought with them their music, and their music consisted of electric guitars and drums. So that's when the genre contemporary music started. Well, Bob Hatfield, who was our minister of music, was always interested in keeping our congregation excited about everything. So he invited a well-established, well-known contemporary Christian group to Dawson. We were so excited. Sunday night worship service, packed house, enthusiasm everywhere. We all settle in, can't wait for this to start. We were not disappointed. Halfway through, there was a commotion in the baptistry, and we're looking in that direction, and then suddenly we see the gold velvet curtains part, and there's one of the band members from this group standing there playing the maracas. Then suddenly he jumps out of the baptistry, down into the choir loft, runs down to the platform, never missing a beat, and continues his big maraca playing. We are stunned. You know how it is when something monumental happens and you remember exactly where you were? Well, that's what happened to me. To this day, I remember where Bobby and I were sitting in the sanctuary. I remember the associate pastor who was sitting next to us. And I can still see the expression, the stunned expression on his face. Everybody had their own thoughts about it, but as I was leaving the sanctuary, I thought of that saying that was kind of common at that time. Times, they are a-changing.
Linda, and I recall the legend of this story is that while Bob loved to try new things and push the envelope, he also had a deep care for the reverence in worship. And if I'm not mistaken, that was the first time, but also the last time that we ever had that group back. And no one has jumped out of the baptistry with maracas since. Linda, thanks for telling your story. We appreciate it. For my friend Stacia Gaines, the platform at Dawson has quite literally held her and her family up through every milestone of her life, including the heartbreaking loss of her husband to the weight of depression just a few years ago. Stacia, I am so glad to talk to you today. Your story is a testament to love and faith and resilience, So, tell me again.
Well, Dawson's worship and music ministry figure prominently in my love story with Matt. Dawson was my college church when I was a Samford student, and I was very involved. I was in college ensemble, college choir, sanctuary choir, and Dawson is where I met Matt. We met on a college ski trip in 1986 to Gatlinburg, Tennessee. There was not enough room on the bus, so Jerome Cole, Matt, and I rode in a car separately, and that's where I first really got to know him. But I had fallen in love with his voice years before we met. He was a frequent soloist at Dawson. He had a beautiful voice, and it was just so easy to listen to. And I never stopped enjoying hearing him sing. So after dating more than 2 years, Matt proposed to me in the sanctuary. I got to tell you, I felt really awkward having a picnic on the platform. Very awkward. But at a certain point, he came down the aisle with a lavalier mic on, singing Nat King Cole's When I Fall in Love. And he proposed there. Later, I found out that the whole church staff knew about it and had blessed it. 9 months later, we got married in the sanctuary. It was a torrentially rainy day, and yet close to 500 people showed up. Matt sang this beautiful song, We Are an Offering, in a dedicatory prayer song. And then we went down to the fellowship hall and celebrated there. During our engagement, Bob Hatfield, asked Matt if he had ever visited a seminary. Bob could tell that Matt was not sold on being an engineer. Matt said no, and the two of them took off to Fort Worth to visit Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. So I got engaged to an engineer, and then I married a minister. Bob Hatfield was Matt's mentor. Bob gave him advice. He encouraged him. He was his cheerleader. And he was that person for Matt from the time that Matt first came to Dawson, his 10th grade year in high school. I don't think Matt ever got over Bob's illness and death. It was really hard for him. Bob was his person. Dawson's sanctuary choir and the music ministry play a huge role in why we came back to Dawson after our return from China in 2011. So in March of 2009, 43 members of the sanctuary choir came to China, and Matt and I hosted them. It was just such a great experience. I think they all just learned so much, and the Lord blessed their time there. And that visit yielded me some of my closest friends to this day. So I'm so thankful for that. Soon after we moved back to Birmingham, we were looking for a church home again. And we came to Dawson's hymnal dedication. We were both in awe of the congregational singing, of the choir, the orchestra, the organ, and knew that we wanted to be in a place that had quality music where God was honored and worshiped. Also, the fact that Bob Hatfield was around was a draw for us as well. In those early years, we were very involved in the music and worship ministry. As a matter of fact, Matt served part-time as handbell and ensemble director. He also helped with the chapel choir, as this was his passion. One year, when Bob became ill in the middle of candlelight, he and Brent Coleman actually directed Candlelight. It was a stressful time, but we all did great. We made it. The end of this story is a sad one. In June of 2023, Matt left this earth and joined the heavenly choir. This love story ends where it began, because on July 24th, 2023, hundreds gathered in the Dawson Sanctuary to glorify God through music and worship, and it was glorious. We also celebrated the life of Matt Gaines. And I am so grateful for Dawson's starring role in my love story.
Stacia, hearing you tell your story about your love story with Matt and the way that Dawson played into it also reminds me of the fact that when we come together for worship, everything is in the room, right? There's great joy and there's great sadness. And sometimes those things are obfuscated by the faces that we put on Sunday morning. That could be a congregant, just a single mom in the back, dragging her kids in 5 minutes late, trying to make it. Or that could be a staff member up front singing the tenor solo on the big anthem. And a part of Matt's story, I know, as we've talked about it before, is a struggle with mental illness and a struggle that really took him down the road to the end of his life. And I wonder if you might be able to share a little bit about maybe your experience as it relates to Dawson with Matt and his struggle with mental illness.
Sure. Matt did suffer from depression as long as I'd known him. But music was the one place that he felt safe and confident. He loved worship. He dedicated his life to the worship of God and to sharing that and music with students. That was really the gist of his purpose. At a certain point, he wasn't doing that. He wasn't involved in music. He wasn't involved with students. And I think he just lost his purpose and lost, and because of that, we lost someone who had given so much and had so much left to give.
Stacia, for those that may be listening today and they may have a loved one who may struggle with depression, I wonder if you might just offer a word to them while they're here, while they're listening. What word of encouragement? You're on the other side of this. What word would you offer to them today?
I would tell them that you have to take care of yourself. I'm so thankful that the Lord stored up his blessings for me before Matt's death. If someone that you love is struggling with depression or other mental health issues or having suicidal thoughts, you can't control that. You can support them. You can encourage them to get help. But in the end, all you can really do is take care of yourself and let the Lord pour into you. If you do that, then you're not responsible for that person's decision. And that's really why I, fortunately, and it's such a blessing, I've had no guilt, blame, or shame. And as a result, I'm able to tell my story. And grief is something we are all going to go through. No one will escape it. And there are ways to lean in, feel the feels, be honest with what you're feeling, and do what you can to heal. It won't be overnight. I'm still not healed. I'll never be healed. But I'm getting better day by day, and it's because of doing the work.
You said that grief is something that no one can escape. And so when we come together for worship, when you walk in that door, you and I and the rest of us are bringing all of those life experiences with us into the sanctuary. The pews are filled with celebration and grief and sadness and joy and regret and mistakes and sadness from years gone past and fear of what the future may hold and excitement about what could be. Tell me again, Stacia, your experience on the backside of this, coming into the sanctuary and carrying in those early days and perhaps even now, just the baggage of grief with you. What is it? What is that like? And what does worshiping with your brothers and sisters, what does that do for you? How does that help you, or does it help you?
Oh, I look forward to it every week. There have been times, John, that like when you do a song that Matt had the solo on, I'll just fall apart. But most days, I am brought into the presence of God, and I bring my pain with me, but I also bring joy and gratitude because the Lord's mercies have been so great in my life. So the worship is in some ways easier than it ever was because God has been so faithful to me that I sing with abandon and lift up His name each Sunday.
Can you say more? You just said that worship has never been easier. I'm having trouble wrapping my brain around that. You have gone through this hellish experience, Stacia. And as a friend of Matt was a close friend of mine. I still feel that grief. I can only imagine what you and your two wonderful children feel. I'm curious. You just said worship has never been easier. What in the world?
It does sound ironic, doesn't it? It sounds contrary. No, I think sometimes when you go through really, really difficult times, you are more in tune with God's love and mercy and kindness. You know, I have needed Jesus more than ever in the last months. And He's been there. He's been faithful. And so when I come into worship, I'm just there to praise Him and thank Him for being so present in my life, for being so kind and gentle and bespoke. Like His mercies have been so personal, just so personal.
And you sit with Judy Adams.
I do.
A fellow widow, and you have some common story. What's it like to know that, quite literally, you're not alone in your story? Like there's somebody there that's walked that road for you.
Well, Judy and I met in sanctuary choir years ago, but we weren't friends. However, her husband, Max, was a huge supporter of Matt's. He actually sponsored Matt's first demo tape. So Max loved Matt so much, and so it was just kind of natural that Judy and I started sitting together. And I never thought I was going to be a widow at 59, but I am. And I know that God loves me more than ever, and that He is, it's my sacred romance that I'm focused on now. The sacred romance of Jesus and what He did for me on the cross, but then in the months since Matt has died.
Thanks again for being with us. We appreciate it, Stacia.
Thank you.
Today, we've heard from Jim Reeves, Linda Little, and Stacia Gaines about how the platform at Dawson has been a place of worship and love and life's most defining moments. We tell our stories. We tell them again and again because they are the testimony of Christ's saving work in our lives. We are found faithful each time we tell them. If today's story spoke to you, share them with a friend who might need some encouragement, and don't forget to subscribe so you can catch next month's episode as well. And a special thanks to all our conversation partners today, our producers Vicki Dennis and Rachel Langston, our audio engineer Kylan Parker, and our pastor, Dr. David Eldridge. You know, the other day he was telling me that he really wanted baptisms to be more exciting, and he had a surprise plan. So last Sunday, after he finished the baptism, he started shaking some maracas he had slipped under his robe.
Then suddenly he jumps out of the baptistry, down into the choir loft, runs down to the platform, never missing a beat, and continues his big maraca playing. We are stunned.
You can find us online at dawsonchurch.org/tellmeagain, where you can link to all available episodes, as well as find out more about our church and our 100-year celebration. I'm John Woods, and I can't wait for the next time you remember your story and tell me again.